This is the January 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dr. Michael Cordonnier. He's a soybean and corn advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel joins us from agmarket.net in Normal, Illinois. And Wayne Nelson, also with agmarket.net, joins us from New Market, Indiana. The Commodity Week program is developed at the University of Illinois, along with Extension and Illinois Public Media. You may find it, listen to it anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. And as a quick reminder, I'm not sure that this will still be open, but at willag.org, there are details there. Registration's not open, and you can still show up. But the Illinois Farm Economic Summit's next Tuesday in Mount Vernon, Wednesday in East Peoria, and Thursday in DeKalb. Registration online, probably at willag.org, or just show up. You'll find all the details on when and where on our website. Again, willag.org, or at the Farm Doc Daily website. farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Michael Cordonnier from Soybean and Corn Advisor. I read that earlier in the week you dropped your production estimates for Brazil. Can you tell me what to and why?
Yes, well, that's correct. Well, you know, the situation in Brazil, you know, they had good moisture in September to plant, but then October and November was excruciatingly hot and dry. Hotter and drier than anybody had ever seen in central Brazil for that time of the year since they've been growing soybeans. So their early maturing soybeans were filling pods and setting pods during this really adverse weather, and the early yields are extremely low. We're talking maybe 7-8 bushels up to maybe 30 bushels, with a lot of yields in the mid-20s, and some fields were just abandoned. You know, replanted twice and then abandoned. Now, these early yields are going to be the worst for sure. And they keep getting worse and worse. So I did lower my Brazil estimate down to 151 million tons with a neutral to lower bias. Now, most estimates in Brazil are in the range of 150 to 155, although one came out this afternoon, 145 to 147. So all the people in Brazil think the total production will be below 150 million tons in Brazil. Now, the rains have gotten better. So actually, this past week has been pretty good. A lot of rain in north central Brazil and northeastern Brazil. It's going to help the later developing soybeans. But it just came too late for the early maturing soybeans. So that's what they're harvesting right now in central Brazil.
Wayne Nelson, do you have a question?
Yeah, I mean, we know that we had really dry and hot weather in parts of Brazil, but then we had some excess rain in the other parts of Brazil. And how much did the excess water hurt the areas where that was at?
Yeah, that's a good point. You're exactly right. Rio Grande do Sul, the southernmost state, had excessive rains. In fact, they're just now finishing planting their soybeans, which is at least a month later than normal in that state. Now, if the weather would continue to cooperate, it still could be okay, but they're not going to have a record crop at all in Rio Grande do Sul. And a little bit further north in Paraná, which is the second biggest soybean state, ironically, they were very wet early on. And right now, as we speak, they could use the rain. They're getting on the dry side. And they say, hey, we need some rain now because our soybeans are filling pods, and we've gone from excessively wet to now needing a rain. So there's really no place in Brazil that can make up for the losses from the early beans up in central Brazil. Everybody else is sort of struggling along here, and it's going to be a disappointing crop in Brazil. Now, I'm at 151. USDA is 161, and CONAB is 160, and they both come out next week with their newest estimates. And I think, you know, both of those entities, they might be 152, 153. They won't be as low as the other market participants, but they'll have to bring those numbers down next week.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, could you I guess basically we've always viewed the southern hemisphere directly 6 months opposite of us in their growing season. Can you maybe break it down a little bit, what percentage of what crops where, to give an idea to some of the people listening to you today that might not know the growth cycle there?
Yes. Well, in Brazil, in most places, you're not allowed to plant soybeans until the 15th of September. Now, you might do a little bit earlier in some states under specific situations, but they don't allow anything earlier than that because they want to control soybean rust. And there's a 90-day soybean-free period in Brazil. You're not allowed to have any live soybeans on your property or along the highway along your property for a 90-day period. So the rust spores can die out from one growing season to the next. So they started planting in mid-September, and they don't finish planting soybeans until, you know, December, more or less, in northeastern Brazil and southern Brazil. Now, the big change in recent years has been corn production in Brazil. They have three corn crops. The first one is planted about the same time as soybeans, but that's a small, like 25% of the total. And then the big one now is the safrinha, which is double crop corn after soybeans. And they will start planting that as soon as they harvest soybeans. And the soybeans right now in Brazil are maybe 1% harvested. So I'm sure there's a few fields of corn being planted as we speak. And they plant that corn in January and February. Then they harvest in June and July. Now that is about 75% of Brazil's corn. And it used to be the small corn crop. That's what the name means. Safrinha means small crop. And now it's the big one. So, and the problem this year is going to be they planted the soybeans late, so they're going to be harvested late, and the farmers don't want to plant their safrinha corn past the ideal planting window, which closes about the third week of February. And especially this year, because with a La Nina, the meteorologists in Brazil are saying there's a good chance that the summer rainy season will end earlier than normal. Normally, in central Brazil, you get your last summer rain about the first 10 days of May. But now they're saying with the La Nina, excuse me, El Nino, the rains might end in March or early April. So the farmers don't want to risk planting late corn and getting a very, very low yield or no yield at all. Corn prices are not very good at all, barely break even in Brazil. So a lot of guys are cutting back on the safrinha corn acreage. I think they're going to cut back maybe 15 to 20% on their safrinha acreage, although nobody knows for sure. You know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, they announced that the seed sales and fertilizer sales are down 20%, but they may have picked up recently. I don't know. We haven't had any news lately about that. So it's going to be a real challenge to get that safrinha corn planted. Now, in Argentina, they plant corn and soybeans. The corn starts in September and October. Soybeans, basically October, November. And right now in Argentina, the soybeans are 86% planted with 17% blooming. And the corn is 78% planted with about 15 to 20% pollinating.
Next week, both USDA and, as you mentioned, CONAB will release their updated figures. CONAB on the 10th, USDA 2 days later on the 12th. You're 10 million metric tons lower, roughly speaking, than both of them. USDA normally is very, very slow to adjust and very cautious. Do you think either of them will adjust downward their soybean crop for Brazil very dramatically?
Well, they are going to reduce it, but your point's well taken. They're always very cautious. And really, they're supposed to tell us what has been, not what will be. You know, we speculate ahead. Now, they don't do that very much. So USDA is 161 for Brazil soybeans. My guess is they'll bring it down at least 5 million tons to the mid-150s, if not maybe a little bit more. And they just can't ignore the fact that we had historically high temperatures and drought conditions when the early beans are being, you know, in the reproductive phase in Brazil. So they'll bring it down, but they won't be as aggressive as a lot of market participants.
As we talk about that and talk about Brazil being down, but Argentina was the poor kid on the block last year. and their weather's a lot better by what I'm reading anyhow. Are they going to more than make up for the loss of Brazil?
Your point's well taken. You know, right now I have all of South America, about 217 million tons. Last year was 198. So we're going to be up 19 million tons. And that's about a little bit short of 10%. So, yes, Argentina had a terrible year last year. Their soybean production was 25 million tons. This year I have them at 50, so they gained 25 million tons. So they are going to compensate for a lot of the problems in Brazil. You're exactly right. Now, if you look at corn, it's kind of interesting. Last year, South America, corn production was about 177 million tons. This year, South America, about 177 million tons. So the corn production this year is going to be about the same as last year in South America. And that is not counting if the Safrinha crop comes in, you know, worse than expected. So the Safrinha crop could be much lower than I'm currently estimating. So we could have a smaller corn crop in South America. But we're going to have a larger soybean crop. There's no way it's going to be smaller than last year in South America.
How do you keep all this straight? Right now we're in the southern hemisphere. Before you know, we're going to be back into the northern hemisphere. So as you go through your growing cycle from the northern to southern hemisphere, is there any standard plan of attack that you have in force here to keep it all straight?
Okay, that's a good point. And what I do for all my clients, you know, about the first week of September, I send them a month-by-month crop production cycle for Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, Bolivia. And I list each month what's planted, how it's progressing, what's the weather like, all that sort of stuff, to keep me straight and them straight. Now, let me complicate you a little bit more. There is an area of Brazil, the northernmost state, that is north of the equator. So they plant their soybeans in April and May, and they harvest in August and September, just like we do in the United States. So Brazil has, you know, the bulk is in the south of the hemisphere, southern hemisphere, but they have a little bit in the northern hemisphere too, so it makes it even more complicated.
I have a question related to the global movement of crops. Given that the Panama Canal is very unlikely to receive enough rainfall that it is able to open up to regular traffic, and that the southern part of Brazil and Argentina have had plenty of rainfall, meaning their export facilities both in Brazil and in Argentina should be functioning well, will the United States come under, even if they're short supplied, greater pressure from Brazilian and Argentina exports to the Chinese market?
Yes. The answer is yes. The Panama Canal just read reports that they're going to be way down on the number of ships can go through on a daily basis. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better. Whereas in Brazil, you know, the southern ports, they don't use that Panama Canal. Now, the ports along the Amazon, they do use the southern, they do use the Panama Canal, but they could go south like the other ones from Paraná and Santos. And of course, in Argentina, they're further south, so they don't use the Panama Canal at all. And last year in Argentina, you know, due to the drought, the Paraná River was very low, so they had logistical problems loading at the Rosario ports in Argentina. This year, that's not a problem. There's plenty of water. So, your point's well taken. There's going to be extra pressure in the United States because those southern ports don't need the Panama Canal, and we do. So it is going to be an issue going forwards.
Let's bring Kurt and Wayne into the answering side of the questions. Kurt, if you take a look at the charts for me, the beginning of this year has some, well, I won't call them anomalies, but rough spots, particularly for corn, and those contract lows that came earlier in the week. What do the charts look like?
Well, yes, 24 was not a very good start on the corn. We basically, most cases, right at the lower end open where December left off there. on the corn chart, Brian Split, our technician, does an excellent job of kind of keeping this in front of us. He's pointed out several times, if you draw a channel, we've dipped below that channel. And now with yesterday's close, we were able to close on the channel line. And Thursday's close here at this recording, we closed back above it. We're sort of in a position here of testing that. And kind of believe if we can kind of hold this channel lower end in here, we can get some type of recovery bounce. Corn chart basically continues, not penny for penny, but the same type of rhythm is following 2013 as we move into 2014. It's very obviously that the market kind of bottoms here in January. And once we get this crop report out of the way, January crop report, it had the tendency to move higher in the spring. So we're sort of testing the waters here, see if the corn chart is still following that type of pattern there, Todd.
Wayne, on the note of the January crop report, it will include crop production numbers. USDA surveys some 70,000 farmers to see what they brought in. Corn, soybeans, and other crops. Will yields be better or worse?
Well, if you take what I've seen in the, east of the Mississippi, you're going to have to say that we would see some production increases. Most everybody over here had a record field of beans or record field of corn that they'd never had a field do that well. Now, is west of the Mississippi going to hold back or did they have bad? But I think they were, fairly fair. So I think we could easily see a little increase on some of the production figures as we look at that. What Kurt was talking about, I mean, basically they said that the low volume and the algo and A, artificial intelligence fund following traders have been pretty hard on the market this week, that all of their technical signals have been more sell signals than not. And what Kurt was talking about is we could take that into the report, but of course we see when they see the numbers being larger, that might even try to spike it down a little more, and that might give us an even better buying point when it spikes down there and seeing people look at support and looking for reason for it to buy back.
One of the other things that will be released, of course, will be the monthly WASD reports, Michael. That'll update the numbers globally, and I'm thinking that you probably keep a balance sheet. What do you suspect it will show for corn and soybeans, and what do the ending stocks numbers mean for the futures?
Yeah, well, actually, I don't trade the market, so I don't track that very carefully. But I'll give you some insight here. I've just been reading multiple reports out of Brazil, and all the analysts in Brazil are lamenting the fact that these prices are moving lower, and they all say basically, don't they realize how bad it is here in Brazil with our production? Why don't these prices go up? Why are they going down? So a lot of people in Brazil are very questionable as to what the market is doing here in Chicago. But as far as the world numbers, I really don't track that very closely.
Let's talk a little bit about the grain stocks numbers as well, Wayne. This will be the first quarter usage numbers. They'll be important to the marketplace to get an idea of what domestic consumption is like. We can follow ethanol easily enough. The soybeans and crush is easy enough to follow. However, livestock use of corn is a big figure, and that's the one where we really have the ability to have a little give and take. Domestic usage pretty good in the first quarter, in your opinion, or not?
Well, like you said, the ethanol usage has been very good. We've continued to stay above what we need to make the government's goals for that. But that is a big question out there. And I don't think, we haven't seen quite the hog production that we thought would be out there. So I think they're going to be on the negative side a little bit on their numbers. Might be a little bit larger than what we thought they could be.
Yeah, speaking of hog productions, I take it you probably took a look at that, Kurt, and saw that numbers still falling, but the number of piglets remains fairly strong, and that just came out this week from USDA.
Yeah, I think FarmDoc put out an article on that, too. They did a very good job. And we're seeing a situation where one's kind of offset the other, but overall pork numbers and just the overall cutout values, we've got these hams, loins, bellies, all in this 80-cent area, just hysterically low. There's just a lot of product out there.
pork exports are fairly good for the most part, but the consumption side of the equation is still questionable. As far as the quarterly grain stocks report, this would be our first benchmark to work with as far as usage, and the numbers will be step one, and we'll kind of go from there. But the other thing on the feed usage side of it, we did see extremely high meal values. We saw DGGs being utilized a little bit more. So there was some fairly good demand there. But the ethanol equation, we're hearing the ethanol margins are getting a little weaker. And so we'll see if this ethanol continues to be a big point of the blend or not.
Well, speaking of ethanol, I'm just writing an article right now in Brazil. They just opened a new ethanol plant. And right now, about 20% of Brazil's ethanol comes from corn. You know, and it was 0% in 2017. So in the last, 6 years, they've gone from 0 to 20%. And right now in Brazil, there's 22 ethanol facilities. 10 are corn-only facilities, and 12 are what they call flex facilities that can use sugarcane when the sugarcane is available. But when sugarcane is not available, they just switch over to corn. And they don't harvest sugarcane during the summer rainy season. So December, January, February, March, instead of shutting down and waiting for sugarcane, now they just use corn. So that has been a big, big change in Brazil's corn usage going to ethanol.
Domestically, how much of the crop are they using for ethanol production?
They might use 10 to 12 million tons out of 117, so 10%. So, and, of course, they got a big livestock industry as well. You know, big hog industry and a big poultry industry in southern Brazil. So it's getting bigger and bigger all the time. And I think the ethanol production will cut in to Brazil's corn exports. Everybody's expecting a much reduction in corn exports out of Brazil. Last year was maybe 52, 53 million tons. And I've seen estimates as low as the upper 30s for 2024. So we'll see. It's going to depend on the Safrinha corn production, how good that production is.
Just for comparison's sake, here in the United States, about a third of the corn crop will go into ethanol production. However, Brazil's entirely different because they use so much of their, and I don't know how much actually, of their sugarcane crop to produce ethanol, and have a higher mandate. Do you know what it is for a percent of ethanol in their gasoline supply?
Yeah, right now it's 27%. It's probably going to go up to 30. That's the new estimate here. And for biodiesel, kind of interesting, right now they are B12. It's supposed to go to B14 in March, and then B15 a year from this coming March. And the processors all say, we got plenty of capacity. We want you to go even more aggressive. So we could do a B20 for vegetable oil. And interestingly, there's the company called Amaggi. You know, Amaggi is one of the biggest grain producers in Brazil and exporters. They are converting one of their farms to 100% B100, so all vegetable oil for all their machinery, all their trucking. They're going to do it for their barging operation. They want to make their whole all their facilities, you know, B100. And there's the truck manufacturer in Brazil, Scania, who's manufacturing semi-trucks, just B100. So it's going to be a big thing in Brazil now, just switch it all over to vegetable oil instead of diesel fuel, and 70% of that vegetable oil is soybean oil. So the crushers are increasing their capacity because they anticipate a lot more, you know, soybean oil going into diesel trucks and tractors and everything else.
Scania, of course, is a Scandinavian producer, a Scandinavian-based semi-production producer or truck producer. Do you suspect that the northern hemisphere, that Europe, will be transitioning as well, more to vegetable oil diesel?
Yes. In fact, I just got an inquiry from the largest vegetable oil biodiesel producer in Sweden, you know, asking me about the same thing about in Brazil. You know, how do they do it? You know, how much are they using? That sort of stuff. So the interest is there. Now, it's not quite as easy in the cold climates to do it as in the tropics. But we're heading in that direction, and I'm sure it's going to go more and more in the years ahead. And sustainable aviation fuel. You know, that's going to be another big thing, using ethanol for aviation fuel. So that's another big thing on the horizon.
Well, since you mentioned that, I will take this up very quickly. For the March 5 all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Curtin, Wayne will both be there. I've been looking into a more in-depth sustainable aviation fuel discussion. Of course, Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, will talk about it and renewable diesel. There is a Center for Sustainable Aviation on campus in the Aeronautical Engineering Department, and we have the director, I hope, will be joining us. And I've talked with BP, who will be one of the largest producers of sustainable aviation fuel, which is just offhand kerosene. In this case, it would be kerosene or made from ethanol or corn. And or soybean, either one. So on March 5th, we should have a interesting look at that during the all-day ag outlook. Now, Wayne and Kurt, what are you thinking as it relates to farmer marketing? Because they're behind, probably on both, particularly for corn, but they'll need to make some sales, I would think, to pay some bills. What should they do? I'll start with you, Wayne.
Well, I think as we look out at the corn market, depending on if it's in the elevator or commercial storage, we're aggressive on wanting to make some sales. If you want to look for a dip that comes after the report or a dip going into the report to reown it, that's fine. But we want to sell that because we're paying storage on it. Otherwise, if you've got it in your home storage, we're looking out and wanting to sell maybe the deferreds going out to the July and maybe selling for later delivery because the price is there. And if we do have the good production that comes in out of South America, that a lot of stock's still here, we see the price coming down to meet the course going off, and we've got a lot of carry in the market. We'd like to capture that carry.
Yeah, Wayne did a great job. They're on mainly catch-up sales. Guys pretty well sold a lot of the beans here last fall and hung on to the corn, so a lot of catch-up corn. A lot of this grain's on basis contract, and that's kind of hanging over the marketplace, so we need some type of strength in here. We feel we've got about 30 days in here to see some type of recovery, but cost of money's been a main issue. Guys have been moving grain and doing some replacement. And take a look at options. The option volatility is relatively low compared to past history. So this is the time window to be putting in some cash replacement. Sell the cash grain, buy a call. That way, if something happens in the southern hemisphere late in the growing season or our early growing season next summer, you can participate that way. But the focus is really starting to shift to 24. When you push the pencil in through here, these are not actually too bad of values. And with what happened last year, fresh in our minds, starting out in the spring or late winter of higher prices, the market eroding, getting away from everybody, it's probably really important to have some price floors on this 24 crop as we move forward.
And I would like to ask, Michael, I know you don't do marketing, but do you feel neutral, bearish, or bullish to the marketplace based on the supply and demand tables that you've been watching?
Well, I would be a little bit more bullish. I do think we have a downward revisions coming for the South America production. You know, in Brazil, I'm pretty confident about that. And in Argentina, I mean, they're not even done planting yet. So we got three more months to go in Argentina. And this weather's been very erratic in South America. So there's maybe more erratic weather to come. So I think the numbers we're looking at now will probably be the high water mark for South America production. So if we reduce this some more, I think it might be a little bit more on the bullish side for the market.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I'll start with you, Wayne Nelson from AgMarket.net in New Market, Indiana.
Well, Todd, we've got a real big report coming up next Friday. And that's going to give us the tone of things. For right now, the signals are all negative. The AI, the algorithm traders are all selling this market. The one thing that confuses me or makes it a little strange is we all talked about all of the value and need for bean oil, and yet the funds are short bean oil and long meal, and all we talked about was we're going to crush for the oil and we're going to have meal left over and not know what to do with it. So I'm wondering if maybe buy meal, sell or buy oil, sell meal might be the way to do as we got this sort of reversed.
And Kurt Kimmel?
It kind of reminded me of that song, The Whiskey Ain't Working Anymore. I guess the market's numb to the news, what we're seeing here in the U.S. around the world. We've got the Red Sea, Black Sea, South America. But, man, you look at a corn chart. We've been sideways since last fall. Beans had some ups and downs, but we're just kind of roller coaster and trending sideways here. So I'll be quite excited to move forward here and see what type of news moves this market up or down.
And finally, Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Your final word for the day.
Well, we've got to keep watching the weather in South America. It's been erratic so far, and we'll see how it goes from here going forwards.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Next week, I'll be on the road. You can join us, the Farm Doc team and myself, in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, or DeKalb. Find all the details either at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or willag.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.